I started playing guitar when I was 7, and I learned Hendrix at 13, got into jazz in high school, and I fell in love with guitar. I love performing, I love playing, I love sitting in my room playing guitar alone.
That's Molly Miller, and this is Trading Fours. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. I am Jamie Green. Billy Decker will be with us shortly. And today's guest is Dr. Molly Miller. Yes, got a PhD in music. Molly is based out in Los Angeles, and she has a brand new album coming out. The Ballad of Hotspur comes out on May 3rd. Molly was a lot of fun. She zoomed in from Los Angeles, and we talked all about the new album, being a guitarist, teaching, all kinds of great stuff. So we're just going to go ahead and get started. Here is our conversation with Dr. Molly Miller. So Molly, it's so nice to talk to you. I know we're going to talk about your new album, which it's great. We've gotten a chance to listen to it a few times. But one of the things I want to talk to you about, you know, there's this perception that jazz is very serious and that you can't smile. And so I love watching you play, Molly, because you always have a smile on your face. You look like you're really enjoying what you're doing. Several times I've seen you don't even have shoes on. So let's talk a little bit about your love of guitar and playing jazz guitar and making it fun. Can you tell us a little bit about why you love it so much?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I started playing guitar when I was 7. And I learned Hendrix at 13, got into jazz in high school. And I fell in love with guitar. I love performing, I love playing, I love sitting in my room playing guitar alone. And to me, it's a very joyous, sacred thing. And I think sometimes, and like I went through this period where I like felt like I couldn't move when I was playing. I had to look serious and not, I don't know, emote. When it's like, it's so emotional what we're doing. It's like, yeah. And so my body is definitely a part of that. So that's what I would say.
No, I think it's great. It's just fun to watch. You know, I jazz guitar, there's like you can't bend strings. I love that you bend strings. There's all these like unwritten rules you can't do, and it's supposed to be fun. So
I don't believe in those rules. Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes people are like, "Oh, when I do jazz this, when I do country that, when I do whatever." And like, while some of those things I understand, and also like, I don't know, I feel like you have a voice and use your voice. And I'm not a purist. Like, yes, I play jazz guitar, but I also like play pop and soul and rock and funk. And to me, it's not like ex mutually exclusive. It's not like I can't like be improvising over changes and not have all these other genres in my body as well.
nice. I have a question, Molly. I asked this of all guitar players. Desert Island guitar, Desert Island amp.
Easy. Yeah, my ES-335, which is my baby, 1978. Yeah, it's in the other room. I played it last night. I'll play it this afternoon too. And then amp, I played it last night as well. My Benson Nathan Jr.
Ooh, I like
Hey, she
that.
was quick. She was
She
ready.
was.
I know what my number one is, you know?
I think most guitar players have like a favorite, right? It seems like that's pretty standard.
I think so. Yeah, I have a
And then
number
like 12
one.
other ones.
Yes, I have a number one, a number two, and then a flurry.
How many do you have total? Do you know?
I stopped counting at a certain point. I mean, it's not like insane, but probably like 25, I don't know, 30. I'm not really
Yeah.
sure.
Are you a purist, or have you experienced or experimented with like modeling amps, Kempers, fractals?
I got a Helix and an HX Stomp in my guitar room. So yeah, no, I for such a long time I resisted, and then I kept having all these issues with my pedal board when I go out on the road, you know. And different issues, whether it's like a cable was busted or I'd have some like weird frequency happening every time I used my wah or my overdrive or whatever it was. So I went to the Helix, the Line 6 Helix, and it made my life a lot easier. So I use that when I tour and play with different artists. And typically for the trio, I just do I have like a pedal board, and then I'll bring in other pedals too. But I have a main pedal board for like home and when it feels safe. And then the Helix for a bunch of other stuff.
Nice.
So I think people, purists, think of jazz, you know, it's obviously New Orleans where it started, and then Chicago, a little bit of here in Kansas City, but New York's a huge thing. But can we talk a little bit? Los Angeles has a huge history, whether it's Wes Montgomery or whether it's Stan Kenton. All these
cool
great
jazz,
right? There's all these great players out there that I don't think people appreciate. So as a Californian, were you aware of that always, or did you discover that a little later in life?
Yeah, you know, I grew up playing music with my siblings. I'm one of five. And my older brother went to UCLA and was super into jazz. And, you know, my younger brother, too, is really into jazz. So growing up, we would go out to see music. We'd go to Catalina's Jazz. We'd go to the Jazz Bakery. We would go, I'd go and like to UCLA and watch his jam sessions. And like, he had class with like, his professor was Anthony Wilson, who's an amazing jazz guitar player based in LA. So I feel really fortunate that a part of my childhood was experiencing the really great jazz community based in LA. I grew up near the Lighthouse down in Hermosa Beach. And that's a really iconic venue, you know, like Miles played there. And yeah, my high school jazz band would do their end of the year concert there sometimes. Like, so I did very much feel fortunate to live in this space. Grew up in LA and be a part of this LA music community. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Excellent. I was doing a session the other day here in Nashville. Country is pretty much you stay within the box, you know?
Yeah.
And the guitar player played a solo and it sounded like he went out of tune or jumped out of sight. I said, "Whoa, we better do that again." He's like, "Nah, that's jazz. Leave it."
Cool. I like that attitude. I mean, I think about my favorite records and stuff, and like the music I love is raw. You know, sometimes they'll speed up 10 BPM from the top of the tune to the end of the tune. So I love a note that is questionable.
So I'm going to preface this all, Molly. My father had his doctorate in music and actually taught music at the University of Nebraska. He was a trumpet player.
Cool.
So that's kind of, you know, there's so many people there's probably 180 of these that I've done so far. Cool. So many musicians don't read music, stuff like that. But I don't think I've ever talked to somebody who has a doctorate in music. I think you're the first. So what intrigued you about wanting to go all the way through school and get your doctorate?
Yeah. You know, it wasn't a decision that I made when I was like 16 or something. It was like I went to USC and got my bachelor's in music. And as I was finishing, my parents and my family was kind of like, "Why don't you stay and get your master's?" And I was like, "No, I don't want to." And I was kind of like, "Well, maybe they're right. Okay, cool." So I applied. And then I was a TA. So I got to go to school for free, you know, and get paid to then get my degree, which is a crazy opportunity. And I also like school, you know, I've always been a relatively good student. And I it's pretty cool to like be in a classroom with a bunch of musicians talking about theory and harmony and history. And like, that's what in my head, like, this was my job. Like, yeah, I'm gigging and teaching, but also like my other part-time gig is like to go to class and like nerd out on music stuff. Then I was finishing my master's and it was the same thing. I was kind of like, "Oh my God, I've been in school since I was like a little kid. I'm 23. Like, I want to be out in the world," or whatever, the real world. And last minute I applied to get my DMA, my doctorate in musical arts, just cause I don't know. I think it was another thing where like, it could come in handy. I don't really know. I wanted to give myself as many opportunities as I possibly could. Like, I knew at that point I really enjoyed teaching as well. I loved playing and I also loved teaching, and I wanted to give myself some flexibility in my life. So I stayed, and God, I'm so happy I did. Like, once again, I like school. I teach at USC now. I like never left school in a way, you know, I've always been either a student or an educator. And it's a kind of beautiful space where you get to be with all these people that want to analyze and talk and obsess and think and live and breathe the thing I'm also obsessed with. Now I'm super happy that I did. It also gave me structure. So, I mean, I was working so much during grad school. Like, I kind of think I'm like, how did I do that then? Like, I'd wake up early to go to class and teach, and then I'd go to a gig till 1 a.m. like most nights, you know.
That's great.
I've always been curious, did getting a master's and then the doctorate, did it help you musically, or did it open up doors career-wise, financially? Or did you actually, did it expand your musical knowledge by taking that extra time and leap?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, because during your master's, you still do a bunch of guitar classes, and also all these recitals are happening, and during your doctorate. So you're kind of honing in on things that you wouldn't. It's just like, you know, you got to transcribe a bunch of cool finger picking stuff, and like, that's cool. You got to record a bunch of guitar stuff at a high level. So I do think I probably grew the most just gigging with people that are better than you. I think that's the best way to get better, is just play with really good players. But school helped me, I think, stay focused. Yeah. And like, I still give myself assignments. Oh, like learn this transcription, like whatever, like analyze the song, make a solo guitar arrangement, but school kind of forces you to do it with a real deadline. Yeah. So I think it definitely helped me musically. While I think the most important part is playing music with other people.
So we're here because you have a new album out. Let's talk a little bit about the new album. It's Ballad of Hotspur. Did I get that right? I have it written.
Ballad of Hotspur.
But you recorded it 2 years ago. So, and it's just coming out now. So what was the reason for the, was it COVID related or just life?
You know, I'd say life. I feel like, you know, we did the record in, like, we recorded pretty much all of it in, now I'm trying to think, April 2022. And is that right?
That's what your PR person sent me. It says okay, April 16th and 17th in 2022.
And that's right. Sometimes like, I'm like, oh my God, is it 2024 already? Mm-hmm. So yeah, April 2022. But then Jay Bellarose, the drummer, went on tour, and then I went on tour. And then it was like 5 months of like us not being in the same place. And we wanted to do a couple percussion overdubs, which we honestly just like didn't have time to do until I want to say like October. So then we get to mixing and mastering and all that stuff. And the record's probably done a year ago. So we are in February, so or March, I guess. So yeah, the record was like done with all that stuff a year ago. And then I was kind of waiting to figure out how to put it out, who to put it out with. I had a couple people that were maybe gonna put it out. And so I was waiting on them. And then I was gonna put it out in February, and people were like, you don't wanna start putting singles out in during the holidays, just put it out in the summer. So it just like kept getting pushed back because of, yeah, life. Like, am I putting it out on this record label? Am I gonna do this? But then last summer, I guess, yeah, like August, September, Jason Mraz said he had wanted to put the record out on his indie label, so in Terabang. So now, which felt right, and I was excited about that.
How'd you go about choosing your mixer? I'm familiar with his name. He's worked with Elton John, Lana Del Rey. How'd you go about connecting with him? Because that's what I'm interested in. That's my world, since I can't play anymore.
Jason Warmer, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so Jay is real deep in the T-Bone Burnett world. He does a lot of stuff with them. And Jason is in that camp. So our last record, so last record we did Mike Piersante, who you also might know, and Jason is someone who had like worked with and under Mike as well, so they have kind of a similar aesthetic, but Jason's a guitar player. And so I was gonna work with Mikey, but he was very busy, and Jay was like, why don't we try my friend Jason? I think he'd be great. And oh my God, I think Jason crushed it. I loved working with Jason so much. He had just moved back to town. He was living on the East Coast for a while, but he was the engineer at the sessions. And then mixed it all. And I just, you know, like I just so trusted him, and it was such a fun and safe environment. Like when we recorded, I brought my pedal board in, I brought my amp in, and then also he brought a pedal board in. So we went like stereo, different pedal boards and different amps, so we could get this like cool big sound, and it felt safe to experiment. Cause I was like, well, if I don't like one of these sounds, at least I got one sound that I love.
Yeah, no, it seemed like a really good marriage between what you do and what he does. So I thought it was kind of fantastic. So kudos. kudos.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it sounds great too. And also, like, Jay records so much, so he really knows like what space he sounds good for drums and for what we were doing. We also like wanted to be in the same room and look at each other and feel each other. So like there were so many things that we wanted that just worked great with Jason. And then we recorded at Valentine over in like the Valley, North Hollywood area. So mm-hmm. It was great.
Nice.
So I'm curious. I'm always interested in who's kind of on your Mount Rushmore of guitar players.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard to narrow it, right, to four people, but just kind of.
Oh, four? Good Lord.
There are only four people on Mount Rushmore. I'll give you a fifth one, Molly. I'll be nice. You get a fifth.
Can I get 15? Okay. My Mount Rushmore, that's like hard because there's different reasons for different people. You know, it's like, so like, I feel like Sister Rosetta Tharpe was a really important one, and Jimi Hendrix was a really important one. Grant Green was my like the first transcription I ever did that was like the aha moment with jazz. But also in that is like, I love Wes too. Like this is like a part of me like understanding jazz guitar. I love Julian Lage's playing. But then it's like also like J.J. Cale, who like, yeah, Ry Cooter. There's like so, I don't know. It's hard to pick one or five or four, but I feel like I know I'll probably be kicking myself later of like, oh, I should have put that person on my Mount Rushmore. But like, those are probably some of the core people. And God, George Benson. I love George Benson so much.
Nice. You're a master of not only jazz, but you've got so much variety. Is there one discipline that you find harder than the other that just you're just like, oh no, we got to do a whatever?
No, I don't know. No, because I think like it's like I don't think it's like, oh, like jazz is harder than rock, than pop, than whatever. Like, sure, like if I get called for a metal session, I'll be like, I don't think I'm the right person, you know. There are certain things I do better that are more natural for me. But I think like this is also something I learned in school where it's like if you just spend time doing something, like there's no secret to getting good at something. It's just like doing it, taking your time. Yeah. It's just like doing the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That 10,000 hours. I think every great guitar player has stories about hours upon hours upon hours sitting on their bed. And it seems, Molly, I don't know if you feel this way, you're younger than us, but you know, when Billy and I were growing up trying to figure out guitar parts, all we'd get it on a cassette tape and try to back it up and figure it out. Now these kids, man, it's not fair. They got it on YouTube. They can slow it down. They can keep the pitch. Wouldn't it be so much easier to learn guitar now?
You know, yes, but also I think the thing is people get like really overwhelmed at the options. So like, there was something about like a clearer path or something I feel like before. And now it's like you're on your computer slowing down this thing or watching a YouTube video of what the transcription is with all the notes there for you. But then you're getting a text message and there's ads getting popped up on the side of your screen of some other transcription you should be doing or some other thing you should be doing. So I know what you're saying, like it is easier in some regards, but I think it's so distracting. And I think that the gaps in people's knowledge are wider now than ever.
Are you that teacher that says, turn that goddamn phone off?
Hey, I say that to myself. I'm like, why is my cell phone next to me? Like I need to practice with it in the other room. That is like one of my 2024 things is like keeping my cell phone not in arm's reach away when I'm practicing.
Nice.
Yeah, because nobody has an attention span anymore.
God, I know. It's horrible. Myself included sometimes. I'm like, I've gotten stupider the last 5 years. You know, like read a book, get off Instagram.
Yeah, it's fun. So can we talk a little bit more about Grant Green? Because I thought that was an interesting choice. I think Grant's way underrated. He, you know, St. Louis guy. And I for people who are listening, you know, most of my our listeners are, you know, in the States, but we have people all over. Grant Green to me is kind of like a gateway into jazz guitar, right? He's much more accessible than a lot of guys.
Yes. And there, yeah, like for me, it was like that record with Sonny Clark. Yeah, Idle Moments. There's like a few records of his, Grant Stand, that helped me understand jazz. I think the way he solos is so like conversational. And so accessible. It's not like he's playing all this weird out stuff. It's like, I feel like he's kind of like, hey, how's your day? Let me tell you a story. And let me tell it to you where it like grooves really hard. And like, I have a motif that makes sense. And like these ideas that are developed. So yeah, he was for sure like my gateway drug into jazz.
Do you, this is kind of a weird question. Do you hear in colors? I think there's a name for it.
There is a name. I do not. Okay. I hear in dance moves.
Are you really?
I mean, I kind of, not really. I feel like every, there's like a different move. You know, to me, the music is really connected to the body, but not necessarily to colors. There's like characters and moves that I feel like will be connected to a song or a solo or something, but not like Burgundy.
This question was asked of me one time. Do you have any musical regrets? And mine was, I didn't major in theory, which I think would have made me a better engineer faster. Do you have any musical regrets?
I wish I had started singing when I started playing guitar, and I kept singing and I kept working on it, because it's hard to be a bad singer and to like, I'm always like, I'm going to get good at singing. And then I start and I'm like, I get a sore throat and I'm like, this is hard. I got to practice more guitar.
Would you like to sing and play at the same time professionally? Is that what the dream is, or
you know,
just for fun?
I think it's cool to be able to sing and like, yeah, to like sing harmonies on gigs. Like I have gigs where it'd be so easy for me just to like sing some harmonies. But I chicken out and I don't put in those 10,000 hours.
Well, that's I don't think people understand. You know, Billy was a singer back in college. He can tell you all about it, but yeah, it's its own instrument.
Yeah, for sure.
You have to practice it. Just, you know, there's all kinds of tech, head voice, chest voice, all that stuff, right?
Jamie, sure. I was also a criminal justice major. How well did that work out for you?
How many majors did you have?
Just that one. And then I went to an audio school. I went to Full Sail down in Orlando way back in the day. So
cool. Nice.
So I assume you're going to tour for this?
Heck yeah. Yeah. When does this podcast come out?
You're going to be out. And obviously I edit all this out. May 1st. No.
Okay, cool.
April 15th. I'm sorry. April 15th.
Yes. Yes. So we got some tours happening. May, I'm going out with Jen and Jay, and there's like a whole West Coast thing, and then like East Coast, Atlanta, Nashville, like New York, like an East. Yeah. So we got a West Coast and an East Coast tour with Jen and Jay. And then I'll be opening for Jason Mraz, doing like double duties from like July 15th or 16th, I want to say, till the end of the tour. And all those dates are on my website. But yeah, so I'll be doing Jen and Jay tour and then playing with Jason Mraz and opening for him as well on his summer tour. So I'm very excited about that.
Well, you have to say hi to Billy when you're in Nashville.
Yeah. Do you know where you're playing?
Yes, we're going to do two nights at Nelson's Drum Shop. Do you know that spot?
I do.
Yeah. Bryson's super sweet, the owner. So, and Jay's super tight with him. So we're going to do two nights there. We did one night there in like 2021, I want to say. And it was so fun. It was like still COVID-y. But so we like, the garage was open and everyone was outside in a big circle. And it was such a beautiful night. So I'm excited to do two nights there.
I'll make sure I swing by and provide you with some authentic Tennessee moonshine. So those solos really will shine that.
Let's do it. Okay. I might have to wait till the latter part of the evening. I'm a lightweight.
So, Molly, I don't see any Kansas City date on here, Molly. I'm looking at your website.
There's going to be a lot more dates up soon. The Jason dates aren't announced till like for like a few days. So once they're announced, they'll be on my website.
Yeah, I'd love to see you play. I just like I said, it's so much fun to see people like guitar.
Now I'm going to look. I am playing Kansas City. Playing at the Starlight Theater July 21st. I'll be at Kansas City Starlight Theater. I will be opening for Jason and then playing with Jason. So let me know if you'd like to go.
Yeah, you can count on it. One of my great joys, you know, my kids are grown. Billy's kids are grown. I didn't go to concerts hardly at all because, you know, you have little kids and you're exhausted. Yeah. I was telling Billy before we started, I was just in Austin for work, but I snuck out nights and got to see Living Color and Extreme together. Last year I went to a ton of shows at Starlight. It's so much fun just to be able to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I imagine I don't have kids, so I'm out a lot seeing shows. I'm taking advantage of this time.
Absolutely. So if you, for people who are first hearing you, I know you've got a website. Are you an Instagram person? What do you like? How do you convey to your fans the best way?
Yeah, go catch me on the gram. And that's probably where I'm like most active on Instagram. I'm Moody Mill, MoodyMill. But I also have a website where I post a bunch of tour dates and YouTube. I have a YouTube channel where I'll put up new videos. Yeah, that's what I would say. And all my music will be up on Spotify and all of the streaming platforms.
And you're doing vinyl.
Oh, yeah. I got vinyl. I got CDs. I got them early because I thought the record was going to be coming out like a few weeks ago. So I got a bunch of vinyl and CDs in my guitar room. That's why I'm not in it, because it looks like a disaster in there.
Yeah.
Are you ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC?
ASCAP.
ASCAP. I just read a fascinating article this morning. They took in record profits this year.
Wow.
And so they better be distributing it to their artists.
I'm actually in the midst of an admin deal, so hopefully they can help get it for me, because the industry side, certain parts of this business are not my forte.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got good people around you that are definitely in the know, you know, and been there and done that, so you should be fine.
I like to think so.
So that's kind of interesting, Molly, since you are a teacher, USC, you said, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so much of the, I mean, it's all about theory and creativity and all that stuff. But so much of the music business is business. And as long as there's been musicians, they've been screwed out of money. Oh, should there be more in that curriculum? Should there be more about how to be a business person as a musician?
Yes. I mean, it's hard. Like, I remember taking a really great music industry class about all this stuff with Paul Young back when I was getting my master's. I can't remember a damn thing from that class. You know, it was like, I don't know, 10 years ago now. So I'm like, and you have to kind of do it is the problem. Same thing like with like playing guitar. You can be in a classroom all day, but it's different when you're on a bandstand. So I feel like doing both is really important. I feel like there needs to, yes, we like musicians need help with this stuff, myself included. So I think it's important to have people you trust that you can ask questions to. I think classes like that are important. But the one thing that can be challenging is oftentimes the things you learn when you're 20, you don't use for a minute. And if you don't use it, you'll lose it, I have to say. So yeah, now I'm like, and things change so quickly is the other thing with the industry, is like things are constantly changing. Yeah. So yes, but also God, I don't know how to, it's like, there needs to be like the problem is like, it's not like it's a one pager. There's all these like caveats and things. Like, yeah. I have someone who I trust, who I work with, who distributes my music, and I'll call him sometimes being like, why this, why that? And then like five sentences in, I'm like, I have no idea what he's talking about. And it's not like, I'm like, you know, I can follow most things, but God, there's too many. Yeah. It's a challenging thing to fully understand. You have to be immersed in it.
I had a young client came in, and things have changed a lot in the last 20 years or so in Nashville in the music business. When I came to town 20 years ago, there was about 3,500 paid staff songwriters. Now it's under 300.
Wow. So
he went in and he came back and he's like, yeah, I got my first publishing deal. And he's like, but my attorney bill was more than they were even going to offer me for a draw.
Yeah.
So there's like three attorneys in town that are making all the money. And unfortunately, this kid had to sign and go through and rack up this huge attorney bill if he ever even wanted to see a cent, you know, otherwise it would have been just a, you know,
I'm like actually in that right now. I just finished one contract. The lawyer has a second contract, and I just got another contract yesterday that I'm like, I need him to look at, but it's like, it's expensive. And I'm kind of like, I'm like a little bit on the fence about it. Cause I'm like, I don't want it. Like, is this thing for sure even going to make me any money, or am I going to like spend $1,000 on a lawyer for nothing?
Yep. I've got a friend that actually signed independent record deal. And he's like, I won't name the record company, but it's something you all know. And it's one of those record companies where once you sign, you die there. You're never getting off your deal. So he goes, I'm not even going to hire an attorney because I know it ain't going to do any good. It is what it is. So he just said, I'm in.
I mean, I get that, but also like it's been nice to have someone who's like, no, don't do that. Let's put this language in here. It shouldn't be 5 years. It should be 2 years, or like all these things. Cause once again, not my forte reading a contract, you know?
That sounds like it's a good thing that you've got Jason in your corner. I'm sure he's dealt with tons of that stuff throughout.
Oh my God. Yes, for sure. Actually, I remember once we were on the bus and someone had sent me a video of, it was like, I forget, some like alcohol company, and they had used like a show of ours, like live footage and live audio. And that was like, it was like, you know, probably some intern found it and like made this Instagram, but it was like so illegal. Yeah. So he deals with stuff all the time. Well, I was like, Jason, look at this. And he's like, what? I didn't agree to that. He's like,
awesome. I had somebody on once who said that the 2 hours on the stage just barely makes it worth the other 22 hours, because the other 22 hours are hard, correct?
I mean, it depends. Like some days touring is like super grueling. And sometimes it feels like you're at like the most fun summer camp. It depends on like who you're with and what you're doing. Like, yeah, with Jason, last summer was like truly felt like summer camp. You know, I wake up and I go for a run and I practice guitar for a couple hours. I'll go get whatever, avocado toast at some cool little cafe down the street. I hang out with my friends, and then we play. And then we sit on the bus and like drink Sauvignon Blanc and like eat pizza and talk about what our favorite concert was ever and what high school was like and what, you know, it's like, it's so fun, you know? But then sometimes it's like, God, the production manager knows I like to practice guitar every day. So he'll like help find, he's like, oh, Molly, there's a closet down over there that you can go practice guitar in. Cause you'll often find me staring at a corner with headphones on and a little guitar amp with like a headset. So sometimes it's like, you want space, you want your bed, you miss your people, you're sick of eating food that's bad, but also it's like the most fun summer camp. And it depends on like the team and the music. I found if you don't enjoy the music, nothing is worth it. But yeah, like I was just out recently a couple weeks ago rehearsing for a week, and the people were great and the music was great. So I had a great time. But yeah, it depends on the day. Sometimes I'll be like, I just want to go home.
Do you enjoy the bus life, or does it wear on you after a while?
Yes and yes. You know, it's like, I'd say it takes a second to ease in. Like last summer, the first 2 weeks, I couldn't sleep on the bus. So I was not the best version of myself. I was so tired and so cranky. My boyfriend came out with us for a couple days, and he was like so disoriented. He was like, how do you do this? Like all night you feel like you're gonna die. You know, like the bus will bump a little bit and you're like, oh my God, we're crashing. But then you kind of get used to that feeling and not sleeping and feeling like no matter how many times you shower and wash your clothes, you're still dirty and smell and whatever. But like, I don't know, it's also a lot of fun. So it's super fun, but also very grueling. I feel like I always come home a little like upside down. But for me, I have the things like the self-care things, if you will, of like making sure I like jog or play tennis, like to have some sort of like physical activity, eat relatively healthy, and practice guitar. So if I'm like doing those things, I feel like they can kind of ground me, and then I get to hang out with my friends and make music.
Nice.
Well, I got to ask you now, because you kind of dropped it. So what is the best concert you've seen? That was one of the things you guys discussed.
I went to the Sphere a couple nights ago and saw U2.
Oh, did you?
Oh my God. I went in not even as like a mega U2 fan. I was just like, cool, like let's check it out, whatever. And I left a huge U2 fan and madly in love with Bono and just like in awe. It was mind blowing. Like the visuals were incredible. The sound was great. And just the band is so good. So I just saw them. So that's why it's kind of still hot for me. You know, I was just like thinking about, I still feel them. Yeah. I did not go in expecting that. I was kind of like, okay, let's go watch it. And then like towards the end, we'll just leave. So we don't have to deal with crowds. And then I was just like there till the end being like, I love you. Let's go. So that is definitely a musical highlight for me.
How much of it was the venue?
The venue, I don't know. Like, that's a good question, because musically I was in total awe. Like Bono's voice is crazy, and the band sounded great and tight. I thought I was going to go in super, like, I'm a guitar player, like, oh, the Edge, cool, all these guitar sounds, like, listen to that delay, it's sick. Like, but Bono was totally mesmerizing. And you kind of understand why Bono is just goes by Bono and doesn't even have a full name, because watch him on stage, good Lord. But the venue, I don't know. It's hard to say, like, percentage wise, because the venue was really awe-inspiring. Yeah, so I couldn't, I don't know. I think I would still have thought the show was amazing, without the venue backdrop. But if I saw a band that wasn't that good in the venue, like, I don't think I would have been the same experience. I think the band was more important than the venue, but the venue
Gotcha.
was pretty incredible.
Well, it's interesting you brought up vocals and you don't apparently like your voice that much, Molly. So who's your dream? Like, who would you love to do an album with and have them do the singing?
Oh, who do I love singing? I mean, either, yeah,
You
there's.
get to put, you're going to put an album out. You get to pick any vocal who's alive. I'll put that caveat
Yeah.
to sing for you. Who would you love to play with?
God, like Norah Jones, I saw her last summer at the Greek Theater, and her voice, like, she just opens her mouth. I was listening to Fiona Apple the other day, and I was like, she has so much pop. Yeah, like, my, there's all these people that I think are just. That melt me when they open their voice. There's like a whole list of people that now I feel a lot of pressure to say. But of course, like Paul McCartney, like that'd be insane to like hear him open his voice and start singing. And I feel fortunate that I get to work with people that are really incredible vocalists. Like, I'm pretty spoiled in that regard. Yeah, I don't have a lot of patience for not that. So.
Molly, I'm kind of disappointed. I didn't hear Jason Aldean or Morgan Wallen come out of your mouth there from Nashville.
Well, yeah, let's add them all. I mean, like, it's funny, like, there's so many people who I would love to play with, really. Like, sometimes I'll sit there and I'll think about it, and yeah, like Willie, maybe, or Dolly Parton, I've been listening to her a bunch. Like, there are like some of these people where you're just like, sometimes it's hard. Yeah, you don't know till you're in the room with them. Like, I was just playing with one of the One Direction guys, Zayn Malik, and God, he sounds amazing. He, like, I didn't even think, like, I didn't know that. I didn't know that I wanted to play with him. And then I hear him open his voice and I'm like, dang, you sound great. So sometimes you don't know. And obviously Jason's an amazing singer. Yeah. And people that I work with in town, yeah. So I think that's also why I don't sing, because I work with so many people that sound so damn good. It's too embarrassing to sing next to them.
It's a daunting thing to open up your mouth and sing in front of a crowd.
Yeah,
I mean,
for
you can
sure.
kind of, if you're the drummer, you can really hide, right? You're way in the back. Nobody's, except for other drummers are criticizing you, but everybody else is fine. And guitar, you kind of, your guitar is in some way, it shields you. But when it's just you and your voice, it's, that's pretty naked.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's something I, yeah, maybe one day I'll work on it, and sometimes it'll be like, oh, cool, I can kind of sing. And then, like, I get a cold and I don't sing for a month and I forget how to sing. Like, I just feel like I have to commit, but it's hard when life is moving around you.
Have you been to Nashville? Have you ever done
Yeah.
a session here? Are you familiar with the Nashville number chart system? Have you heard of it?
I do know it. I've spent a fair amount of time in Nashville and I know the number system. And I'm like all about the numbers. Like, when I think and teach, I'm always like, it's not a C chord, it's a one chord, and whatever. Like, that is very much how I think. And I think of, like, when I learn songs too, I don't think it's like, okay, E D C. I think, 3 2 1. And then if
Right.
you go to a G chord and it's E D C, then I think 6 5 4. Like, I really think in numbers for each of those chords. And that opens up the fretboard for you quite a bit.
We played a joke on a drummer the other day in a session. So we handed out the number charts when the musicians came in. Everybody had numbers except the drummer. His was written out. It had FH, FH, foot hand, foot hand, foot hand. He thought,
That's
he didn't think it
funny.
was funny. Oh, he
I
didn't. Well, he was a good sport, but I thought it was funny. FH, foot hand, foot hand, foot hand.
was gonna ask if he appreciated
Well, Molly, this has been so much fun. I was supposed to see you at NAMM, I think it was last year, and you and I actually chatted a little bit on the app, and it just didn't work out. I talked to
Oh.
Gretchen Menn last year, which she was fabulous. Another, there's so many great women guitar, Gretchen and Nelly Brosh has been on and stuff. So it's so much fun to talk to you. You're a total joy. I know I will come out and see you here, and I'm sure Billy will do the same, but it's so much fun. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yes, thanks for having me. And yeah, shoot me a note ahead of time and we'll be sure to connect.
Dr. Molly Miller, so much fun. Yeah, the new album comes out next month, May 3rd, but that's only a little over a month, barely. You can wait that long. Check it out down in the show links. You know I do that work for you. It is her website and how to buy it and the tour. And yes, she is touring this summer either on her own or opening up for Jason Mraz. Easy for me to say. So that's going to do it for this time. We are back in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today, we will be back with Tim Easton. Tim Easton is also a great musician who's got a new album out. It's a theme. All right. Until then, go out, support live music. We'll talk real soon. Bye-bye.